Senator Jacobson, who came back home to enjoy a little detox session from the legislature, but right back to Lincoln to get into it, and you always have those wrap-up meetings to contend with.
Yes, I have.
Did you feel like you got enough time away to get refreshed again, or has that come later?
No, that'll have to come later.
Yeah.
Right now, you just kind of get the chills when you could drive by the Capitol. The last 30 days were really pretty grueling. We were going starting at 9 o'clock in the morning instead of 10, doing an abbreviated dinner break for a half an hour, and we were going late nights. So we were going as late as 11 o'clock, most commonly going until 8 o'clock at night. And then you get up and come back the next day, and we're still having early morning meetings outside of the legislature, regarding the legislature, but outside the legislature. And those generally start at 6:30. So it makes for a fairly long day. And I can tell you from experience, it doesn't get any better, that that people's moods as the end of the session comes around get a little frazzled when you're going those late nights, and it starts grinding on you after a while. And so I was glad that we got through everything and really did, I thought, a pretty good job of getting some good legislation passed. I would like to have seen more progress on property tax, but I would tell you that we do have some limitations on what we can do. The year this year was primarily focused on balancing the budget, digging out of the deficit. And just as a reminder for people that have asked, why did we go into the session with like a $435 million budget deficit when the budget was balanced after the special session last summer? And the answer is that the forecasting board met in October, and when the end of October, and when they met, they did a new budget forecast, and we had learned at that point that the federal government was going to do a cutback in our FMAP percentage, which is our federal Medicaid reimbursement rates. And this is, I guess you'd probably say it's the American way. States whose per capita income and whose there are other measurements that they use for the health of your state. And if your state has a high health score, in other words, you've done well, then your FMAP percentage goes down. And so they're going to send you less money from the federal government to go to Medicaid. So states like California, well, their percentage went up. So there's something that doesn't seem quite fair about that. Mm-hmm. But over the biennium, that was going to be a little over $350 million. So it's real money that create a hole in the budget. So we're dealing with that right out of the gate, and then other federal aid cuts that were materialized, and then they also cut back on the growth rate, thinking that with the tariffs and some of the things going on at the federal level, is the economy going to slow? Could we go into recession? And all of that could weigh into this. So I do think it's important for people to remember that they will meet again this summer and do another forecast. And depending on how things go with the tariffs and what happens to the federal economy, we could very easily see some restoration of some of the dollars that would have been forecasted, and the budget could end up being better. But we have to work off of what the forecasting board comes up with. So we started the year about $335 million in the red. So our first focus was to fix that. And then after we worked on balancing that piece of the budget, then we had another shoe drop and another set of dollars, federal dollars, that were reduced. And so we had to fix that part as well. the concern that most of us have with the and the federal funding side is now that we're getting close to a new federal budget, if they pass a budget, how much state or how much federal aid to states is going to be pulled back? Like, for example, Medicaid is a federally mandated program that the states have to provide to qualified residents, and but it is funded predominantly, like over 90%, by the federal government. But if they come back and would say, yeah, we're only going to fund 75% of it, then that's a huge unfunded mandate to the states, and that would be a huge number for Nebraska. So those things like that that we worry about in terms of when DOGE looked at making their cuts, they wanted the cuts to be much deeper. In fact, I think when you look at the DOGE cuts, they're all backloaded. You really aren't making any much progress at all. You're actually increasing the deficit. You're just slowing the growth of the deficit. And that's what a number of conservative Republicans are concerned about. But I think we're relearning the same lesson that we always have learned in the past, that once you give up an entitlement, in other words, once you say we're going to give you this program for free, don't ever plan on taking it away, because it will be very, very difficult to get done. And that's really kind of what we're dealing right now with Medicare and Medicaid, and what we're also dealing about to some extent with Social Security, that any tweaks that have been made, you know, people need to, they were concerned, well, they're going to get rid of Social Security. Well, that's just never going to happen. But there could always be some tweaks in terms of raising the retirement age and maybe reducing the COLAs, and little pieces like that can make a big difference in what the total cost is going to be. But those are not popular programs to tinker with, and nobody wants to be the political party in power when those changes are made. So just a past kind of watching what happened previously, you want to be very careful about that. But we did end up passing a budget that balanced, and I think we've got about $4 million left over in the budget, so there's not a lot of room to maneuver with. People have talked about, well, we have to come back for another special session. I don't think we do. I expect that we'll come back in January and take over where we left off. But it's been a kind of at times contentious session. There were a lot of complaints about the legislature looking at overturning the vote of the people by making modifications to the petition initiatives that were passed. I would just remind people that petition initiatives, if you can get enough signatures, you can get a petition initiative on ballot. And if it's something where one group or a large segment of people get something for free, there's a pretty good likelihood it's going to pass the vote of the people, even though it may have a lot of unintended consequences. And that's really what happened this year with two or three of the initiatives, was that they had many, many unintended consequences. Paid sick leave and the minimum wage were two of them, in that you had to, you always have to think about who all is this affected. So if you're a farmer or a rancher, or you've got, you're a very, very, very small business that employs very few people, I've always scratched my head a little bit about that we're talking about a minimum wage, not a maximum wage. In other words, there is no maximum wage. You should be able to pay whatever you want to pay your employee, and they have the choice to work for you or not. And if you're not competitive in your wage structure, then you're not going to attract workers. That's clearly what's going on right now. So when we do things like a minimum wage increase, substantial increase, like double, all of a sudden, if you're a small business and you're paying closer to the minimum wage than you are the new minimum wage, this is a huge hardship on your business. And in some cases, given the small ag businesses that are out there today, implement dealers in particular, small implement dealers, it's a real struggle for them. And so that's part of what the tinkering is on those. I know people mm-hmm. don't like it, but with 33 votes in the legislature, you can make those changes. That's really how the Constitution was set up, though. So I don't think we take that. I don't think you want to do that flippantly. I think you want to just make minor changes. And then one last thing on the constitutional amendments. There was a ballot initiatives, which are different than constitutional amendments. The ballot initiatives, there was one particular initiative it really dealt with the minimum wage, made some practical fixes to eliminate farmers, ranchers, and certain other employment situations. Mm-hmm. And it got worked out. And then when we got the final reading, you need 33 because you're making a change on a ballot initiative. And we were missing one senator on the floor when we started the vote. So Senator Ballard voted no, so he'd be on the prevailing side. And then filed a motion to reconsider. The clerk inaccurately ruled that he was out of order because he wasn't the bill sponsor mm-hmm. on final reading. And then the next day he determined that he had erred and that should have been allowed. So by that time, the speaker wasn't willing to reschedule the bill until January. So that's going to come back in January. And I guess it's a little bit like selling real estate. If you ask a realtor what's your worst enemy when you sign a contract, it's time. It's the time from the time you sign the contract to close on the real estate. There's a lot of things that go wrong, and none of them are good. So that's not gone away, but it did not move forward this year. A couple of bills that I thought were good. LB 303 was a bill that was brought on behalf of the governor by Senator Janet Hughes. That bill really looks at the TEOSA funding formula and is really set up to bring set up a commission that would include school administrators, teachers, school board members, various people involved in education to work on reforms that we could make public education more efficient, and particularly when it comes to funding. It's a very complex situation when you put all the moving parts. I think people think, well, it could be real easy to put caps on school spending or limit how much you can spend. But literally every school district is unique. And if you get into rural school districts, our valuations are higher. And so therefore most of the smaller schools in western Nebraska do not get equalization aid. North Platte High does, but our North Platte Public School does, but no other school district in District 42 gets equalization aid. They get the $1,500 foundation aid, which is a big help, but it's not a huge number. So what is frustrating is that many of what we have to look at is the cost per pupil. In other words, there's massive amounts of money that goes to Omaha Public Schools for equalization aid. And they have 53,000 students in their district, and their cost per pupil is around $10,000 or $11,000 per pupil. Compare that to McPherson County, that has approximately 53 kids, and their cost per pupil is over $45,000 per student. Now, the difference is that their total mill levy in McPherson County, I think, is somewhere around 60 mills. So they just got more valuation to spread that over, and so therefore the state looks for those districts to pay their own way. I'm concerned that we've got to come up with a better way to reduce the cost bar to encourage what's already going on with a lot of school districts with their athletic program, where they're merging their athletic programs. So whether it be Sand Hills Consolidated, whether it be SEM, Bruning, Davenport, Shickley, BDS, they run their school districts separately, but they consolidate their athletics. And I know I've talked to a lot of people, like in those districts, who said, we would merge our schools, but the problem is the mill levy in our districts are too diverse. So if I merge, let's take, for example, if McPherson County decided that they wanted to merge with North Platte Public, their mill levy is 60 mills for their mill levy, and it's over 100 mills in North Platte. So how do you tell the ranchers in McPherson County that we're going to drastically raise your taxes so that we can consolidate the school? You know, that's not a good sell. So I think one of the things this commission will probably look at is ways that people can be held harmless if they choose to try to reduce their spending and become more efficient. I'll give you an example. In Shickley, my understanding is that they've got a couple of elementary classes that have three kids in the class. So you have one teacher, and they're teaching three kids. Now, they may be teaching a couple of class levels, but they're three kids. And if you look at Davenport and you look at Bruning, and the three of them have consolidated their sports teams, I believe, but if they could do the same thing where they would not need as many teachers because they don't have the student body, and same thing with administration, they could lower the overall cost of education, still utilize the buildings that are being utilized there now today, but they're not able to make that choice because the mill levies between the districts are too disparate that they're going to be winners and losers, and you just can't, you got to get over how do you eliminate winners and losers, and this would be for people that want to voluntarily merge, and how do you make that possible? So I'm kind of anxious to see this commission being started. I think a lot of people believe that the legislature's subordinating their a lot of people are upset that we're doing the commission because legislature should just make the decision. But that's one of the problems that we've had over the years, is we need to figure out what the levers do and then consequently make sure we've tested it with the people that are in the trenches to help understand what the consequences may be. So that's part of what we're, I think that this LB 303 will get done. So I'm anxious for them to get started.
Yeah. Do you think, I know the governor is focused on property taxes, lowering them. Do you think that there's going to be more tweaking next session on that and more effort to bring property taxes down?
I think there will be. I think that I really thought we had an avenue this year to, with the state tax, basically the the state property tax credit fund was established, and what we've tried to do is any dollars we could come up with be used to go into that relief fund and be able to provide more property tax relief. One of the bills late was LB 169 and 170 that would raise the taxes on pop and on cigarettes, and it would also pop and candy, and then it focused on really high dollar items that are items that would not be regressive, meaning that lower income people would not be utilizing this service, and so therefore they would never pay it. Mm-hmm. One of those would be, for example, chartered jet services. If you wanted to charter a private jet, that would remove the sales tax exemption. You would pay sales tax on it. Seemed like a reasonable idea, but this year the progressives in the body were not willing to do any changes in the tax system if the money went to property tax relief. So you heard me right. They would not approve any kind of shift in taxes. And it's really frustrating because we heard a lot of comments about how we really want to reduce property taxes, but they really don't. They weren't willing to do any support, any bill that would have resulted in property tax relief. LB 170 and 169 and the part of the other bill up there as well, those three bills would have generated $100 million in property tax relief by virtually shifting it to sales tax. And yes, I use the word shift, and that's exactly what I mean, is that there's only so much money out there, and all the dollars are being spent today. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to make property tax improvements, we're going to have to either grow the state, okay, or we're going to have to shift the taxes to another source. But those are, or we're going to have to cut spending. And we're trying to do all of them. I've always believed that property taxes end up being the shift, that if we can't find the money, it ends up with property taxpayers. And we've got to stop doing that. So I'm not opposed to a property tax or to a check shift where there are more dollars spent on sales tax that do not negatively impact low-income earners and consumers are not going to be affecting business inputs. If we can have a property tax that avoids those two areas, I'm probably going to be supportive of it, as long as the dollar for dollar goes to property tax relief, because the opposite has been happening up to now. We've been giving other types of relief that ultimately ends up in a property tax increase.
Okay. Well, you've given us a lot of good information, as always, a lot of good food for thought. I'm sure probably during the time the session's out, from the time it reconvenes in January, you're doing a lot of thinking about your own things and projects that you'd like to get going and bills you'd like to introduce. But beyond that, things like you just mentioned, how can we do this, and how can I get enough support from other senators, to make things happen that'll be in the best interest of most Nebraskans, right?
I think that's right, and I would tell you that one thing about term limits is we had a very large freshman class coming in this year who had a lot of great ideas on what we can do to reduce property taxes. The only problem is that these are old ideas that are coming back, and they haven't really researched well enough the reason that they were not good ideas. So that's one of the problems with not having a lot of historical knowledge in the legislature. I think people get frustrated that we have the same people down there too long, and there clearly is a need for term limits. I think the question is, should it be the length that it is today? And I would submit that most senators would not stay 12 years if they had a 12-year term limit. But if there were a few of the good ones that could stay, it would really smooth out the cliff effect we have right now, mm-hmm. where the freshman class and the sophomore class are very large, and the junior class or the senior class is smaller. The junior class just has a handful of members in that class, so that is a little bit of a concern about where the historical knowledge comes from, not only in terms of ideas, but in terms of how to work your bill, get it through the legislature and pass it, and do something productive.
Mm-hmm. Senator, thanks so much for joining us today. If people like to get a hold of you and share their concerns and things to get you started thinking about things coming up next year, how would they do that?
They can use the same contact information. My staff is there year-round, so they'll be there in the office, 402-471-2729, or M. Jacobson with an O at leg.ne.gov. So that's the email address. So I read all the emails, and my staff does as well, and we'll follow up with you.
All right. Thanks again. We appreciate it, and have a good week down there, and we'll visit with you next Monday.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right.